Blog Talk Radio.
5, 6, walking forward. Not yet. Go!
And that was awesome. Sean, I wanted to tell you, I had this dream the other night. It was really bizarre. Can I talk to you about it?
You can. I'm here. I'm here for your dreams.
Okay, so I had this dream that we were doing the podcast and you were coming up with the timeline. I have really bad dreams.
That's great because I actually printed out all my notes this week because that's how arduous of a fella I am. And there is some timeline stuff going on this week like no other.
I
still have a lot of memory of when things happen. Plus, there's the internet where you can check stuff out.
You mean now or back then?
Now. I mean, I could check timeline stuff like super easy.
I can't wait to hear all this stuff. I kept texting you today and like all through the week. Like, this episode is awesome, and really, like, even watching it now, I'm like, this is one of my favorite episodes at the very least of the first season. I think it's my favorite one that we've watched so far.
Nice. Hey, hang on. I'm just going to plug my earbuds back in. I think I'm going deaf. Hang on.
As you can tell, Sean is old. He lived throughout the 80s.
Yes.
So.
Yes, I went to a lot of concerts, did not wear earplugs, did not listen to my parents or my grandparents, and I threw a firecracker near my ear and it went off. So, yeah, it's starting to show.
Were you one of those carrying the boombox near your head type guys?
Yes, and it was always on 10.
Nice.
Whether it was hip hop or Ozzy Osbourne or Iron Maiden, just crank.
Always the eclectic music listener. Should we jump right in, Sean? You ready to go?
Dive head first, no helmet.
Okay, so this is season 1, episode 7. Call me when you get there, and Sean, you'll be relieved to know that there is no reference that you won't understand. And with the title of this episode.
That's true. No, it took me a minute last week. That was kind of just showed me how really stupid of a person I am sometimes. But that's great. That's where the humor is.
Right. It's very layered. This episode has so many great Murray lines. And again, like some great Erica moments too, I think.
Yes.
Just funny. I think all around, I really like this episode. So anyway, the first, so our opening narration is Patton Oswalt telling us that of the cars of the 80s, they could travel through time, they could catch ghosts and talk to David Hasselhoff, and Barry got his license. And I'm wondering already, were the clothes, speaking of references, were the clothes references to anything? I was like, that's like very 80s driving. I don't know, like what's your memory of driving in the 80s, I guess is my question.
Well, funny thing is that I remember buying my one and only pair of leather driving gloves because, they were kind of like cross-cultural. Like you could wear them with like a heavy metal outfit or a punk outfit or a breakdance outfit, or you could be a yuppie in like a Jaguar. Everyone had them. And so when they pan to him in his acid wash jacket with the leather shoulders, and I have something else about his outfit later, but he's wearing 501s, Levi's 501s, which were so big in the 80s. I can't even tell you, with a button fly. I don't know why.
Wait,
I don't know why they made this weird bulge in your crotch.
Maybe that's why. Like, Barry does everything to, like, seem cool. And I love how he's, like, he's dressed to the nines to, like, drive in the station wagon. Like, in the Clark Griswold ugly station wagon.
Yes, running his fingers along the trim of the wooden-sided station wagon.
Yeah. He's, like, he is such a bad... I love Barry. He's such a legend in his own mind. But then Bev catches.
Oh, but wait. We also find out his birthday. I paused it to look at his license. 9/3/1969 was his birthday.
Ooh, a September baby. Just
yeah.
Like
I got to start filing all this information away.
I know. One day it's all going to come back. Wait. So that means Barry turned 16. That means there's no reason it's not 1985.
Right. But we'll come back to that. We will whip so hard back to 19. I'm writing all this down because that is incongruous.
I know.
What's that?
Oh my God. You just changed my life with that fact. I'm throwing out all of my notes because I'm like, holy crap. I didn't even notice. So anyway, go ahead.
Barry Stewart Goldberg. That's his middle name. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so Bev's giving Barry the rules of the – Bev's rules of the road, and quite frankly, they're pretty reasonable. I'm not going to lie. Like, always call me when you get there was always my mom's advice too, and I think even to this day, she's just like, wherever you go, just call me when you get there. Like, just call me if you're getting – like, if I'm going traveling like, across the country, she's just like – just call me when you get to Colorado, you know?
Right.
Like, I think that no passengers. Like, I get, like, this is typically mom stuff. And I think last week we saw a lot of bad Bev parenting. This week's a lot of Murray bad parenting.
Yes.
Speaking
of Beverly, it's been driving me nuts and just reveals how my mind works. There's always something about Beverly in the core of my DNA that is always slightly turned on by her, and I don't know why that is, and it's been bothering me, and I finally figured it out.
What is it?
It's because she used to be on Reno 911.
Oh, I just think she's hot.
Well, she's hot, too, but she used to be, like always had, like, cleavage showing and lip gloss on Reno 911, and really curvy, and so I was trying to figure out if I had like a mother complex by seeing that she was hot, but then I remember I had a comedy crush on her in Reno 911. Anywho,
so we get this great. I love that Murray is typically just being a father. He thinks he's being a father by repeating whatever Beverly's last words were in the bitching. And I love
learn your state capital.
I love do the dishes, damn it. She's like, I don't want to find you face down in a dish. And he goes, yeah, do the dishes, damn it. And Barry goes, what, you don't even know what we're talking about. And Barry's like, of course I do. Learn your state capital, damn. Great back
to
back.
Stick up for me. Can't you just stick up for me just once? Never. Never.
Never. Oh my God!
Map with plastic overlays. That was so great. In the safe zone. Oh,
learn
God.
Your state capital. That's so great. And he starts giving him a lecture about college. How hard it is.
The amount of suck in this room is unreal.
I know. Yeah, but then so Barry goes, "Why don't you take my side just once?" And Murray goes. And Patton Oswalt, or adult Adam, goes, and that's when Murray finally took Barry's side. And then Murray goes, nope. And then Patton Oswalt goes, like, wait, that never happened.
Yep.
So
never.
Now I have a question about there's a short scene in the next – it's a short scene in the next scene. Barry's at the movies, and, of course, his mom embarrasses him by making the ushers of the movies at the movie theater say, you didn't call your mom. Is he watching Short Circuit?
Yes. Might be Short Circuit 2, actually, which I think might have been
a
bigger...
That was Michael McKean. I didn't look it up. That was Michael McKean in Short... I'm going to look it up now. Michael McKean.
While you
short
look
circuit
that up, I like that the big dorky usher who came with the flashlight, his name tag said Buddy on it.
I didn't notice. Oh,
Buddy.
You're so good at picking out these little details.
Oh, that's where the magic lies.
So Michael McKean was in Short Circuit 2, which came out in
1988. Oh, I was right. 88?
Oh, my God. 88. What's going on with their timeline?
It's a disaster. The whole time.
We got some work to do, but that.
Oh my God, I dug deep.
I bet you had it written down too.
I actually tried to do some research onto where I think the influence for this song came from, and I meant to text it to you, but it's slightly reminiscent of a song called I Hate Everything About You by Ugly Kid Joe. But
I watched the
chord progression is similar, but it's still not the song. I'm going to find it. I'm going to find where they're taking the tag from for that song. Anyway, Obsession.
Ugly Kid Joe does a really good cover of Cats in the Cradle.
Oh, right. Anyway. Holy shit, you took me back there. Wow.
Let's put a pin in the Cats in the Cradle, because that's actually going to come up in probably my favorite episode of the show. So we get Murray's trying to work the VCR, and Adam's wearing a Tron shirt.
Yes, I wrote sick Tron shirt on Adam.
Tron came out in 1982, so this is consistent
right.
with our inconsistent timeline. This makes no sense, but it makes sense. You know what I mean? Now, here's where things get a little wonky, even though things are a little wonky. So Murray really wants to watch the Phillies in the World Series. And but before we get into that, I just want to point out another great Murray moment is when Adam's like, I'll just do the VCR for you. And Murray goes, no. Haven't you ever heard the phrase, teach a man to fish? And Adam goes, you promised to teach me to fish 2 years ago, and you still haven't done it.
Oh, I missed that. How did I miss that two times in a row?
That's a good one. So anyway, the Phillies won the World Series in 1980, but appeared in the World Series in 1983.
But what?
So the Phillies were in the World Series twice in the 80s, one in 1980, one in 1983. They don't get back to the World Series until 1993. What in the hell is Murray talking about? Where are we?
Yeah, I had a note for 1985 written down for some. We'll have to come back to that for sure. I know. Later we're in Erica's bedroom and there's a Whitesnake poster on the wall, which I don't think that formation of the band was actually around until 1985, but I could be wrong.
Ooh, or you could be right. I would love it if that was true. That would be so consistent. Ah, consistency turns me on.
Ha!
I think that's why I'm into bad.
Maybe.
So anyway, they play this fun game with Murray. No, it's a voice control remote. And I wanted to point out that this is the second, like, the kids can be really mean to Murray. Remember two episodes ago when they locked him in the garage after they found his love notes?
Yes, very sadistic.
Murray's not a good father. They really hate this guy.
I would have liked to have locked my parents away a couple times, for sure. But I think my parents are way worse than them. So,
speaking of turn-ons, Barry comes in and Erica starts twisting his nipple, and I'm
purple nurple,
and drags him by the nipple upstairs into her bedroom. Ouch! And that's when we learn about Erica's system. I love it. So she started.
Yeah.
What was your sneaking out system?
I was actually trying to think of how I got away with so much shit. It was usually I was hanging out with Dave Homerhausen, and we would always go find the keggers in his VW Bug. He was older.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so it was always a question of staying at someone's house for sure.
So Erica, so that's pretty much like Erica's system. She says, so we get another mention of Lainey. We still haven't met Lainey yet. But Erica says,
no.
I go say, I'm at Lainey's, and I went to a Def Leppard concert in New Jersey. Ooh.
Yeah, that's heavy. In the red zone. Def Leppard was in the red zone.
And she's been to, here's the list of terrible places and adventures Erica's been on. She's been to New Jersey, Manhattan, and now she's going to the Kegger in the Woods. What a badass. Go, Erica.
Yeah, Manhattan. The black zone. Wow.
I'm gonna go on a limb and say, like, Erica is your 80s soulmate.
Maybe. We might have been pals. I'm starting to pick up on stuff. Little sprinkles.
Like what?
Also, just about, it looks like there's, like, the form of rebellion where she can get away with it, and I was very good at that. I was extremely good at that.
Also, I wanted to ask you something else. So, in this episode, so you just mentioned that, Erica has a Whitesnake poster. She mentions that she went to a Def Leppard concert. Now, there's a later episode where she's really into New Kids on the Block, we learn. Is that a thing? Were you allowed to be that eclectic in the 80s?
Girls were, guys weren't. For sure. It was a little more compartmentalized. Like, the metalheads didn't really hang out with the punks, and the punks didn't hang out with the jocks. And the jocks definitely didn't hang out with the nerds. But there was a little crossover with what the girls liked if it was, like, if they were boy crazy. That's for sure. New Kids on the Block, though, I think was a little too young for her. Like, she would have been more into, like, the Whitesnake. Or maybe she just had a boy crush on the boy bands because they were fucking huge. We'll talk about New Kids on the Block later. I have a whole thing about that.
That's great. My theory, though, is that Erica is fronting with all this Def Leppard Whitesnake stuff, and she's really into New Kids on the Block. But again, we'll get to
okay, because Def Leppard and Whitesnake would make her out to be a real, real slut. Like, that was slutty music, if you will. It was all about cock rock. Whereas New Kids on the Block was a little more, you know, suburban, you know, plight of ballads and.
I'm looking at Erica's posters now. I see the Whitesnake poster. And then she's got some other weird posters in there, like weird pictures of, like, guys in the shower. It's very, very boring.
And she also has a TV in her room. How old is she supposed to be? There's no way. I mean, they must have been just rich as hell if they had TVs in their bedroom.
Yeah, and I guess if they can afford Barry to drive their station wagon. I guess they only have one car, which I find odd. Anyway, so Pops and Adam come back from playing tennis. Isn't that adorable? And Bev gives him the life alert.
Which I don't think came out until the later 80s, like 88, I want to say.
So the commercial premiered in 1989, and it's really famous for that catchphrase, I've fallen and I can't get up. How big was it?
Yeah, it was huge. My bass player in my band, I think I was in 1990, he would just say it over and over and over, just all the time. this obnoxious kid from Boston. I've fallen and I can't get up. That's exactly how he would do it. And he would just do it. He'd be at like 7-Eleven, you know, getting a Coke or something, or just getting anywhere. Oh, yeah. Catchphrases were huge in the 80s. Like, just, you couldn't escape them.
I imagine that you guys are probably at fault for that, because I bet what happened is that your bass player said it once, and you were like, oh, that's great, that's from that commercial. And you all laughed. And then he said it again, and you laughed again. And then he said it again, and you're like, would you shut the hell up? But
you let
him taste the nectar.
Yeah, it's just like my cat. He can totally predict my behavior and knows how to get a rise out of me. Yeah, he does it twice, and I react a certain way, and he'll just keep doing it. I'm so predictable.
This is also we've already kind of been down the road of, like, Pops not really wanting to admit how old he is. He's still young and full of life at heart, but he really is an old-timer. So that night...
With his kimono. So
I know. I have something to say about, kimono. So that night, Erica gives Barry a speech to say. So Barry goes into the kitchen, and Bev has literally poured an entire bottle of corn oil into
a block. Yes, I wrote this down. Yeah, I was like gagging when I saw that.
Have we
walks
talked about
were
Bev's cooking
huge.
Before?
No, woks were a big thing. Like, it was such a trendy thing to have a wok in your apartment and or your house and make, you know, your own garbage food from the shitty cookbook that it came with.
Have we talked about Bev's cooking?
No.
At all? So Bev likes to cheese and parm everything, and it's really funny. So this is kind of her stepping outside the box. We'll see you later.
Yeah,
it's kind of a running joke. She covers everything with cheese.
She had... Nice. Yeah, I was trying to figure out what she was making. I was like, is she frying chicken? And then she was like, add all this, like, bell peppers and onions and mushrooms. And then she says that Barry will get some extra stir fry. And I was like, oh, that's a,
I know.
My evil stepfather used to make mandarin chicken all the time, which was terrible, with bagged rice that he didn't drain after he cooked it. And he wouldn't take the membrane off. He wouldn't take the membrane off the mandarin before sautéing it, so everything just came out really bitter, soggy, and sweet. It was so gross.
It is really gross.
I hated him. I wish he was dead. Sorry. Anyway, where were we?
Friendly show. So Barry starts putting the moves on Bev. Like, I'm gonna say Ronnie McFadden. I'm gonna say at Ronnie McFadden's house. And Bev goes, I love Ronnie McFadden. And Barry goes, yes, that's why I chose him.
Yeah. Manipulating mom's emotions.
I know. These are terrible kids. These are not good kids. I know we are, like, we always give the parents grief, but these are not good kids. Especially Barry and Erica. Adam will come into his own.
Yeah.
So
he did tell her he was going to use rule number 4, which will be he'll be home at 10.
Yes, and he's going to Ronnie McFadden to study Spanish, which is muy bueno, which he doesn't understand. There was such a lack of culture in the 80s, I feel.
Yeah, it was very whitewashed, I would say, for sure, at least where I was from.
Anyway, speaking of culture and mixing cultures, Barry's now... We cut to Barry in the car, and he is jamming out to It's Tricky by Run DMC. A banger.
Oh, like, man.
The banger of bangers. I imagine this is like what you had on your boombox.
Yes,
your
definitely.
Ear.
I was so into Run DMC and Houdini and Africa Bambaataa. And that's when Run DMC really started to break out. Yeah, I love that. But he was killing it in the car, too.
He was. He was like he was rapping along to it. Like we talked and seen Barry's hip hop skills. He goes by Big Casey.
Yes.
You know Barry. Like when Raising Hell by Run DMC came out in '86, Barry ran to the record store, bought it, and I bet he hasn't stopped. I bet that's all he listened to is that whole year.
Yeah, because Run DMC came out like. As like you were kind of a rebel kid if you listened to Run DMC. But you're actually more of a rebel kid if you're listening to Africa Bambaataa or some Boogie Down Bronx kind of stuff. But anyway, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Run DMC. They changed my life, so for sure.
Now, were they like the rebellious group because they would like team up with Aerosmith and like do like hip hop metal covers.
Yes. Definitely.
That's cool.
And sample heavy metal guitars and stuff in there. They were doing that before Public Enemy did, for sure.
So Barry gets to the woods, the kegger in the woods, and he meets Erica. And Barry has severe flaws in his plan. So Erica's plan, and this is why I waited until now to say it. So Erica's plan is, say you're going to someone's house. Call mom to say you're at that person's house. And then you're home free. Barry just goes. And he's like, he's like, I'll find their phone when I get there. I'll find a phone in the woods.
Back when we had to rely on payphones. Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, you poor souls.
Like, even when I moved to New York, like, 22 years ago, I always had to have, like, $3 or $4 of quarters in my pocket just in case I had, like, got out of work and had to make, like, 3 or 4 phone calls if I couldn't use my work phone.
I feel like this family's so rich they could have had, like, one of those car phones.
Yeah, they definitely would have. They definitely would have.
So I love Erica just rips into Barry, you dumbass. You need a freaking phone. And Barry's like, oh my God, I got to go call my mom. And then we get the Barry run of like the arms behind the back flailing.
I got to call my mom.
That's
so stupid.
That's not something
so
you typically scream.
No.
You know?
But I started to notice some things coming out, some cross-referencing of styles. Erica was wearing the miniskirt with the wide pinstripes on it, and I think I noticed some wide pinstripes, vertical ones. Those were, like, super cool for, like, one season in, like, heavy metal and, like, punk. And I was never cool enough to own them, but that was like 1980 for sure.
I mean, that if that's the case, that would be consistent with the Phillies in the World Series.
Yes.
But we're clearly not in that year. Ah, I hate this. Fucking timeline screwed up. This is terrible. I hate this show. I'm kidding. I love it. So Murray comes home and we get some really bad Murray parenting right now. So Murray comes home and all he wants to do is watch the Phillies. And Bev is freaking out because Barry hasn't called. Wherever he was going, Barry has not called. And Bev's only called 8 times to Ronnie McFadden's house. And Murray says, call me when it's 15. And Bev says he might be face down in a ditch. And Murray goes, or not. But what we definitely know is that I will be watching the Phillies. And I keep thinking, like, what if Barry's actually dead?
Yeah,
you know?
I mean that was a big game if it was the Kansas City one because that was a huge World Series. But I was super distracted about during this whole scene because of Beverly's powder blue fuzzy sweater. Oh my God, there's something about a fuzzy sweater that used to just make me insane. I don't know what it's not like a reveal. Or anything. There's something about fuzzy sweaters back in the 80s that still make me a little.
Speaking of what Bev's wearing, can we go back to like the very beginning of the episode with the shirt she was wearing? I was really hoping you could talk about it.
I had something written down and we kind of glossed over. Why is she always, she's a housewife. She's a home mom. Why is she always dressed like she's going somewhere? Like that was like a really tacky. Like a fake Gucci or something, or like what's the other, not Gucci, the other gross one?
Versace?
Versace. Yeah, I think it was like a knockoff Versace or something. But yeah, she's wearing this in like the middle of the day. That was totally like if you were going to like a upscale lunch or business meeting or, it was gross. That was horrible.
I love it.
But there was
the shirt screams. It screams like this is the 80s. I could see this as a 1985 shirt.
Yeah, she had it buttoned all the way up to the top. Like, she's wearing it around the house. Like, that would not be comfortable. Hey, my Google alarm's going off for some reason. Hey, Google, stop. I don't know what that was all about. There's always some kind of fun interruption with technology whenever we do our show.
maybe it's your time machine. Maybe Google's like, I know why Bev is wearing the shirt around the house.
Or maybe it was my alarm from yesterday to wake up at 7 from a very long nap.
So little do we know, Barry is literally like running all throughout the backwoods of Jenkintown, Pennsylvania, the Philadelphia suburbs, trying to find a phone. And the one he finds, like, the cord was cut off. Was that something cool to do? Like, why would anyone do that?
The only time I've ever seen anything like that was when this brawl broke out, and I saw somebody rip the phone off the actual phone and the cable off to go beat somebody with it. That was in the 80s, too. That was really weird. Yeah, I don't know why anybody would cut the phone.
That's like in the middle
that
of
seems
nowhere.
Like, it always seemed like there was something fucked with the phone. Like, I thought he wasn't going to have any money on him. I thought maybe the coin, sometimes the coin thing would be jammed. Or there was a thing, oh, man, in the 80s, there was a thing where they, I think they redesigned the coin slot, the coin return slot, because people were putting infected heroin needles in them. Like, you'd go to get your change and get stabbed by these needles. So Southwestern Bell like changed every single telephone to where you had to push in the thing, and it wasn't just a hole that had your change come out.
It was
very terrible using a phone back then.
Yeah, that's how you get eight.
Yeah, apparently. That's how I got it anyway. No, I'm just kidding. That's the worst joke I've ever said in my entire life.
My mom used to warn me that, like, apparently they do the same thing, like, on movie theater seats. Like, if you sit down in a movie, like the old movie theater seats that were just, like, cushioned, you just sit down and, like, somebody, like, stuck an infected needle and it would give people AIDS. That's so gross.
I think 197.6% of that was all urban folklore. It was probably just some little eighth grade idiot just made it up. You know what I mean? Sat on a plastic fork from like a takeout restaurant in a movie theater, and someone's like, "Oh my God, the guy got AIDS because it was a needle." It's like, yeah, it didn't happen. Maybe in Times Square.
What?
I'm sorry. That meant nothing. I said maybe in Times Square. Non sequitur. Okay. What were you going to say?
Speaking of AIDS, Pops has been getting busy with one of the tennis players, Miriam Ferguson. I'm not going to lie. Miriam Ferguson's kind of hot, too.
Yeah,
I was like, dang,
yeah,
good for Pops.
Yeah, Pops is. But he had a meeting in the morning, so he had to throw her out.
Well, remember, so Miriam finds... Miriam finds the life alert, and, like, apparently the life alert for old people is, like, I don't know, like, what's something that, like, a girl would look at and be like, oh, you have that? I gotta go. I don't know, like, a Star Trek poster or something?
Maybe squishy New Balance. Crocs?
Yeah. But Miriam's
maybe
like,
maybe, like, one hoop earring?
Miriam's like, I knew I was going on a date with like a 70-year-old man. I didn't know he was old.
Oh, that kimono. Here's something very, very precise. And I'm surprised I caught this. On the table right by the door where right before, you know, he's got some, like where he puts his keys and stuff, and there's like some photos and frames. Right before the door is Adam, his picture. So the last thing he sees out of his apartment and is Adam, and the first thing he sees going into his apartment is Adam's photo.
Aw, that's so cute.
I know. I couldn't believe I saw that. I was like, am I actually a good person for recognizing that?
That's adorable. John, you're going to be a great dad.
I don't know. Maybe in the next life. I don't know. You never know. There's still time. Oh, or is there?
Dude, I'm looking at Pops' apartment right now. He's got this sick stereo system.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Dude, I'm just looking right now. Look at when Miriam Ferguson's putting on her earrings. He has this pretty cool stereo system right behind her. He also
had a radar range. I think it was actually before it was called a microwave. It was called a radar range. It was just a super fucking crazy powerful microwave that they. I think those were the ones that were actually giving people cancer. But they were monster. They would just roast stuff up. They were actually a better machine. I think they didn't make things soggy. Anyhow.
Oh, yeah. That is an old-school microwave.
It's a big one.
That's a heavy-duty microwave. So Pops, so Miriam's like, I gotta go. And Pops is like, screw this life alert thing. He throws it at the garbage can. He has the worst aim, so he bends down to pick it up, and he breaks his back. Meanwhile, back at the Goldberg house, I wanted to highlight this. So Bev runs in to Murray and says, I'm a failure as a mother. And that's going to come up a lot. Like that line, I'm a failure as a mother, or Bev's insecurity about being a failure of a mother, comes up a lot. So that's, I think that's the first time we've heard it. So let's take
but
it.
You're
that's
good at other things. But you're good at other things.
Yeah, but
things.
This is like a little Goldberg trope. She's good at putting cheese on things, but she's a failure as a mother. And we find out as a daughter because Pops calls Bev, and Bev is like, screw, I don't want to talk to you, and hangs up. And that is so. And also the failure of a mother thing is the second trope in this scene because Bev says, what if Barry has to make? And she does the make sign.
The make?
Remember when remember in the Poltergeist episode when when Adam wanted to sleep with Bev and Bev goes, do you have to make? And she does like the little symbol, like the thing with her hands.
Oh, yeah.
So she does that. She says, what
wow,
if he
I
has
missed
to
that.
Make? He has to make cuckoos? This is Bev's line. You have to make cuckoos? You have to make cuckoos? And she always does that. So anyway.
So many little things to pick up on.
Yeah, I mean, again, like this is part of the podcast. It's like we try to pick up on these things. We're running a little low on time, so we got to start speeding through some stuff. So Bev sends Murray out to go find Barry, and Murray is so intent on not getting the game spoiled for him that he's honking at the cop, that he's not listening to the radio. And then he finds Barry's jacket on the side of the road. And I'm like, what is Barry doing trying to hail down a truck and standing in the middle of the road? I'm like, dude, get out of the way.
Oh, we also missed that. Wait. Shit. That.
We have a pop. Adam goes to help
Murray,
pop.
Murray
wait, said
what
to,
did we
miss?
Murray said to Beverly, you could just assume that they're alive. And she says, that's the stupidest thing you've ever said. It's just assuming that her son was still alive.
So Adam goes and helps Pops. And I love the
what
line.
What happened?
So Adam is like literally wheeling Pops, like dragging Pops by his ankles. And Adam got a full freaking view of Pops. "Quote unquote," Robin.
Oh, that's so disgusting. Oh my! What is that? Pull your. It's supposed to be revealing.
So Pops agrees that the life alert isn't so bad, and then we get Murray So Murray drives Barry back to the party, and he's like, Murray is not understanding at all, and I don't know why he's driving Barry back to the party, but he says, Barry, you're secretly grounded. And tell your stupid sister. I love it. I was throwing it for... He gets back to the party, Murray honks the horn, and Erica tosses her beer into the woods. And she's like, I was throwing it for a friend.
Oh, man. Yeah. What did he say? Something about you're voluntarily staying in every weekend for 3 months?
Yes.
Wow.
Don't you dare go out.
Man. And then they have this crazy hedonistic pagan party by the fire, everyone dancing.
Well, before we get to that, I just want to get, this is my, I think this is such good writing, is that last button when Murray is lecturing Barry. Barry turns to him and says, I didn't think you'd be so understanding with the Phillies losing and all. And Murray gives Barry the death stare. And he's like, I will get out and I'm going to run you over. So
and then
that was so
that,
great.
That right before the magic moment was, you actually cared about me or something? Or you actually thought about me? And he's like, yeah, especially considering the Phillies lost.
When Murray gets going, it's great. When they, like, allow Jeff Garlin to be, like, a strict parent, I think it's really funny. But this is really bad parenting. Murray's like, I'll just go lie to your mom for you, and you're just going to ground yourself. And I guarantee you Murray doesn't enforce this at all. But you're right. So our last song is It's Tricky by Run DMC, which we talked about before. And, yeah, there's, like, this paganistic dancing around the fire, like, super close to the fire montage. And for some reason, everybody's watching Barry dance. I hope it's because he's a moron, because he usually embarrasses himself around crowds.
Yeah. And he looked like such a dork. Like, if you, like, everyone else, I checked out their clothing. Like, everyone else seemed, like, really legit. There was a guy that, like, had his pants tucked into his elf boots. So he was the cool guy, you know, kind of spiky hair at school. And then, like, I saw, like, other people, like, wearing, like, slightly cool 80s stuff, but nothing on him would look cool with that, like, Phillies jacket and that shirt and the, yeah. So, yeah, maybe he was more of a spectacle.
And did we, we got about 2 minutes left, just to call back a little bit, Barry totally embarrasses himself again in front of Lexi Bloom, who Eric is hanging out with. So Erica could totally hook Barry up with Lexi Bloom right now. And just totally doesn't. She
well,
be like,
probably
boy,
trying
I
to.
Wanna, I know you want to bang my friend Lexi Bloom.
Right.
And we know Barry really wanted.
Yeah, he really dropped the ball the first time, though.
He did, but I think he doesn't really help himself either. I don't know. If I was like 16, I'd be like, I'll be grounded. I don't care. My mom can call the police. I want to be with Lexi Bloom. That's just my thinking.
Oh, yeah. Confused, misdirected hormones.
He's really into his mom. Remember, Barry's dream girl is his mom.
It's true. And speaking of dreams, I noticed that the Goldbergs have a full pantry full of food. And we never had that growing up. I don't know if the Goldbergs were rich or maybe just my family was super poor. But we always had, like, a few things in the pantry. But they have, like, that special extra pantry for all bulk items and stuff. I was like, damn, they eat well.
And then we get – so speaking – and we know how rich they are because Murray gets TV time. And this is what our little post-credit dedication is dedicated to, Adam having ruined Murray's TV time. The real Murray Goldberg. Rest in peace. And we got about 10 seconds left. Maybe we just hold out. And that was awesome.
That was awesome. That was such a good episode. I'm so glad I watched it twice.
That was great. We're going to be back next week with season 1, episode 8. Bye, everyone.
See you later, Darth Vader.